Well, hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Team Call Palace podcast. I'm Ben Watts, he's Matt Watts, and we're chatting off the back of another Crystal Palace victory. Would you believe it? A 5-2 win over West Ham. It's becoming the new high-scoring thriller in Premier League football, this London derby, after last year's 4-3 win at Selhurst Park. And Matt, how much did you enjoy your Sunday afternoon watching Palace bang goals in?
I did, yeah. The first half an hour was absolutely fantastic, and it's the sort of thing that in the past, I don't think we've really done enough. You know, when you play against a team who are playing in Europe on a Thursday night, there's a chance that you might be able to catch them cold. They might still be a little bit leggy. We were all over them in that first half an hour. We didn't let them settle, and we played some really good football. To be honest with you, when it was 4-0 after 31 minutes, if anything, that kind of flattered West Ham.
Yeah, like you say, another post-European hangover for our opponents, but we capitalised. And well, last week we went through the kind of 1 to 11 in terms of the contributions from the team. I reckon we go through the 1 to 5 this week, starting off with the first goal. And well, it comes from some quite delightful interplay on the edge of the box before it gets finished off.
Yeah, it does. And I have to say, the front three, Eze, Elise and Mateta, were on fire in that first half. Ebere Eze plays a key part in the goal. Some really nice play in and around the box. Of course, the ball manages to work itself out to Joachim Anderson. Anderson puts in the ball. And West Ham, with all of their players who are, what, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", they couldn't deal with the cross. Michael Olise, one of the smallest players on the pitch, nips in. He manages to get in front of Emerson, in between him and Fabianski, and nod it into the empty net. It was a fantastic start. And as I've kind of alluded to, it was coming.
Yeah, I think I saw someone refer to the West Ham goalkeeper as Flapianski, as his attempt to deal with the cross wasn't particularly great. Like you say, Elise nodding it in. He plays a part in the second goal as well, which actually came from the returning Chris Richards winning the ball back on the halfway line.
Yeah, Kurt Zouma gave the ball away. To be honest with you, he had a bit of a mare. The ball comes to Michael Elise. He drives out the defence, a really nice ball down the channel for Jean-Philippe Mateta, who timed his run really well. His low shot was kept out by Fabianski, but then the ball just kind of hung up in the air, and Ebere Eze, with a delightful acrobatic scissor kick, he also hung in the air for quite a long time, and the power that he managed to generate as well. It was a fantastic finish, an emphatic way to put us 2-0 up.
Yeah, delightful stuff with the finish from Ebs. And you mentioned about Zouma having a mare. He would go on to get quite embarrassingly nutmegged by Ebere later on in the game. But the third goal comes from that Will Hughes cross. And just quietly, Will Hughes is looking like a completely different baller in recent weeks, I guess, as many of the other players are under Oliver Glasner.
Yeah, he is. It was another really strong performance from Will Hughes. And I think this goal just kind of epitomised the chaos at the back for West Ham, because they were at sixes and sevens. They were all over the place early on. They couldn't deal with the Palace press. They couldn't deal with our patterns of play. And I think this goal just kind of embodies that, because it's a nice ball in from Will Hughes, but there's massive indecision at the back post. Daniel Munoz looked as though he might nip in to score his first Palace goal, but Emerson did it for him. I think Fabianski does have to take some of the blame, because there's a bit of a willy, won't he? And ultimately, he didn't come. Emerson sticks out a foot, and the ball ends up in the back of the net.
And so on to number four, and JP Mateta getting in on the riot with another goal for the Frenchman. So that tucked-in shirt is just doing wonders for him, isn't it?
Yeah, the 90s NBA baller look is really working for him. What I loved about this goal is this time it was Ebs driving at their defence, a bit like Michael Olise did for the second. Ebs drove at the defence. He played the ball down the channel to Michael Olise. A fantastic cross. And again, a really well-timed run from Jean-Philippe Mateta. A really nice finish. I must admit, in the stadium, I didn't celebrate this one too hard, because I thought, was Michael Olise offside? Was Jean-Philippe Mateta offside? But they both timed their runs really well. And as I mentioned earlier, 4-0 after 31 minutes. It didn't flatter us. We had other chances as well. Ebs had a sighter. Michael Olise had a sighter. Joachim Anderson also in that first half had a headed effort where he probably should have done better. As I said, West Ham were at sixes and sevens, but fair play to us because we capitalised on it. And as I said earlier, there have been times in the past where we've almost kind of sat off a team when they've come into the game off the back of a Thursday night game. There was absolutely none of that in this one. We were all over them from the off, and quite simply, they couldn't handle it.
And just to complete the scoring, the fifth goal in the second half, JP Mateta. The other day, I think somebody suggested online that he was the best striker we've had in the Premier League. And I thought, did you not watch prime Benteke? But this guy's turning into him at the moment.
To be honest with you, if he keeps on playing like this, then there is a debate to be had, because he is in fantastic form. Oliver Glasner is definitely getting a tune out of him. I thought this goal just kind of summed up West Ham on the day, to be honest with you, because they did regroup. They were better in the final 60 minutes of the match, but ultimately, this is such a poor goal to give away. I mean, you mentioned the nutmeg. Ebbs has completely mugged off Zouma. And then Jean-Philippe Mateta just has so much time and space. You know, he's in the West Ham penalty area. He should not have that much time and space to pick his spot. But another fantastic goal from our point of view. Great to see the likes of Michael Olise, Ebbs and Jean-Philippe Mateta racking up the goal contributions. I must admit, I made a conscious decision to not put any of them into my fantasy team because I didn't want to curse them. So yes, I am taking some of the credit.
Yep, I'm in the same camp as you. Did not put any Palace players into my team, even though I fancied Ebbs and Michael to run riot this week. But you can't have a good FPL day and a fantastic Palace day. It just doesn't happen. Just on to their two goals. Speaking of bad FPL days, my brother, your cousin, brought Dean Henderson in. And he was obviously at fault for the second goal in a big way. And the first West Ham goal was kind of exactly what we were predicting on the previous podcast when we said about them being a kind of aerial threat with the crosses, etc.
Yeah, and when you've got the likes of Zouma, Ogbonna, Suchek, Mikhail Antonio, you are going to possess an aerial threat, aren't you? And this was one thing that David Moyes was really annoyed about in that first half. There are a few times where West Ham played it short and he was absolutely apoplectic because he wanted them to slow the game down. He wanted them to get up the pitch and he wanted them to go a bit longer because ultimately that is playing to their strengths. As you said, they got the goal back in the first half. Antonio actually had a really good chance before that that he managed to put over the bar, but he put this one in. Unfortunately, it was kind of in that corridor of uncertainty, wasn't it, between the defenders and the goalkeeper. The striker's always going to get there first. And then, of course, the second goal, not the best back pass from Tyrick Mitchell. It was far too hot, to be honest with you. And I must admit, I know keepers are generally quite good with their feet these days, but I don't like seeing back passes in the goal, because this sort of thing can happen. Dean Henderson's just taken his eye off it for a second and it's bobbled over his foot and gone in. It's very messy. It's the sort of thing that 15, 20 years ago would have been on a bloopers VHS. Thankfully, those things no longer exist, but there is a thing called social media. So yeah, it does kind of take the sheen off it slightly. It's a disappointing goal to concede. But ultimately, when you look at the stats, we had 18 shots to West Ham's 4. And we had 7 shots on target to their 1. Now, obviously, it's quite impressive. They've got 2 goals and they had 1 shot on target in the entire game. But it does just kind of underline how dominant we were.
And presumably, that's where you're going to heap the praise at Oliver Glasner's door. Again, this was a different type of display to the Glasner ball of last week, but showing all the kind of key reasons why we brought him in as boss.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, you have to look at the team and, you know, we've had a few issues at the back with players missing. Obviously, Chris Richards came in for Jefferson Lerma, who was missing out with the hamstring injury. Lerma's been excellent for us in recent weeks, but obviously great to have Chris back. We do now have a bit more firepower back in the forward areas. It made me laugh how we can't seem to have our best forward players on the pitch as well as all of our best defenders, but there we go. That's very Palace 23-24, isn't it? But when you look at the team and the way they are progressing, you can see what Oliver Glasner and his staff are doing on the training ground. He's been in charge for, 2 months? And it is absolutely night and day in terms of pressing, in terms of attacking patterns of play, in terms of all of the players knowing exactly where they need to be, both in and out of possession. In the past, we've always praised Roy Hodgson with the way he set teams up out of possession. We always felt as though in possession, he was quite reliant on individuals and kind of creating moments for individuals with ability, the likes of Ebire Eze, Michael Olise. But this system is very, very different. And as I said, the patterns of play are clear for all to see. You can see the sort of triangles involving the wing backs and the attacking midfielders and the sitting midfielders as well. It was just really, really good to watch. And I honestly think that first half an hour was probably some of the best, most dominant football I've seen Palace play in the Premier League.
Any other players you wanted to pick out? I think afterwards, Oliver Glasner said he couldn't really name individuals, although the one he did was actually Nathaniel Clyne, who had another solid game.
Yeah, he did. I have to say, I've been really impressed with the way he's adapted to that right centre-back role, because he mentioned to the club media after the Liverpool game the fact that he's never played there before. And he also mentioned the fact that he's probably one of the smallest centre-halves to ever play in the Premier League. But yeah, I think he's done really well. I also wanted to mention the wing-backs, because I think they've been absolutely outstanding. The energy that they bring. I mean, Daniel Munoz has been transformative to the way that we play. And also Tyrick Mitchell, once again, a really good performance from him. I still think there is more to come from him in the final third. And that's something that I really hope Oliver Glasner can get out of him. But defensively, again, he was excellent. And also, I have to mention Adam Wharton, because, once again, he was absolutely sensational. He completely bossed the midfield. Of course, he went off. There was one point where it looked like it might be quite serious, but Oliver Glasner has said it was a clash of knees and that he's hoping it's not too serious. So, yeah, fingers crossed, because he is just a fantastic young player.
Yeah, and the manager was obviously in the build-up to this game, bigging up Joachim Andersen and saying how well he's done playing alongside players out of position and the leadership that the Dane has shown at centre-half, and obviously got an assist in this one too. So, yeah, an all-round excellent day for Crystal Palace. We'll talk more a bit about the celebrations as a part of the wider football club in a moment. But whoever runs the social media accounts, admin had a decent day out as well, did you think?
Yeah, they did. And this is the sort of thing that you love to see. Obviously, Nottingham Forest put their statement out on social media after their defeat to Everton. Well, Palace put out a statement of their own. It simply read, 5 extremely good goals, 2 goals conceded, which we simply have to accept. Hashtag CPFC will now enjoy their Sunday, which I thought was a lovely touch. And it's a little thing, but it is the sort of thing that I enjoy.
Starting off part 2 then, Matt, with the champions elect of the Women's Championship. A victory over Lewis means sadly their opponents go down, but Laura Kaminski's side on the brink of going up to the WSL.
Yeah, Palace Women beat Lewis 2-0 at the Dripping Pan on Sunday afternoon. I'll say it again, the Dripping Pan, fantastic name for a football stadium. Yeah, we are on the brink. And for weeks, we've been speaking about the fact that it's going to come down to that final day showdown against Sunderland at Selhurst Park. Well, Sunderland have been slipping up recently, and they fell to defeat against Charlton, who have leapfrogged them in the table. We are 3 points clear of Charlton heading into the final game, but our superior goal difference is vastly superior, to be honest with you. I would say that we've got one hand and four fingers on the trophy.
Yeah, I think it's like 20 goals or something. We'd have to lose 10-0 and then win 10-0 on the final day. So it is all but mathematically done that Palace Women are going up. Fantastic opening goal in that game against Lewis. And then Molly Sharp, who's been on great form in the last few weeks, bagging another goal as well. So I hope they thoroughly enjoy their celebrations before that celebration party, I guess, at Selhurst Park next weekend. Let's touch on the under-21s as well, because they were probably doing some celebrating of their own this week.
Yeah, we've got more good news to talk about. It's been a really good week, hasn't it? The under-21s beat Everton 4-2 to reach the Premier League International Cup final. The goals were scored by Franco Uma, trialist, who we know to be Jemiah Omolu, Danny Imre and Justin Deveni. The under-21s will take on PSV once again in that final. That is a rematch of last year's final. It's going to be held at Selhurst Park in the coming weeks.
And how about the under-18s this week, Matt?
The under-18s drew 1-1 with Spurs. Unfortunately, there was a late own goal that denied us the victory. The under-18s have been on a really good winning run. So, yeah, disappointing for them, but still another point on the board.
And just before we briefly preview the two upcoming games against Newcastle and Fulham, there was a report in some of the local newspapers talking about some of our out of contract players for the end of the season, that Palace are going to make some decisions on those guys kind of after these next two games. And I guess we're probably in a situation where there was a few squad players that we thought maybe were beyond their usefulness in the, you know, bluntest possible way, that actually are probably coming into these negotiations feeling like they might have got a future at the club after all.
Yeah, I mean, it may sound a little bit cynical, but I think the likes of Nathaniel Clyne and Will Hughes probably had a little bit of extra motivation in the last few games because they are two of the players who we believe to be out of contract. And I think it's important to emphasise the fact that we believe these players are out of contract because Palace don't always announce contract extensions. But yeah, I think, to be honest with you, based on what we've seen in the last few weeks, you'd have to say that Nat Clyne in this three at the back system as a right centre half probably does deserve a new deal, even if it's just a 1 year deal as a kind of squad rotation option. I think it's definitely something worth exploring. And then Will Hughes, I mean, the partnership he's forged with Adam Wharton in the last few weeks, they've been incredibly impressive. So yeah, I think once again, he probably does deserve an extension. And I think with Will Hughes, one thing that we often forget is that he's still under 30. You know, he's been around for a very long time and he's not the quickest over the ground anymore, but he's still under 30 and he definitely does still have something to offer. Obviously, it'll be interesting what happens with some of those other players, someone like Joel Ward. Will he want to stay on? Will he possibly want to explore options elsewhere? He's been at the club for an incredibly long time, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I think also there will be some movement, the likes of Remy Matthews. Will he stick around? Someone like Jairo Riedewald too, Jeffrey Schlupp. I'm not expecting all of these players to extend their deals, but I would imagine there will be quite a few of them sticking around at least for another year.
Yeah, I guess it's about striking the right balance between having the squad depth and not leaving ourselves too much to do in the summer window. But at the same time, clearly they'll have positions that they do want to attack and bring players in to compete with the first team players and maybe leapfrog some of those backup guys, etc. So yeah, obviously a bit of forward planning in that sense. Right then, on to the games this week. Newcastle coming to Selhurst Park on Wednesday night. I guess Eddie Howe's side were never realistically going to live up to their efforts of last season, but they too have had quite a few injuries, and obviously the European football and a couple of big highs in the Champions League at the start of the season, that eventually has sort of taken its toll. So how are you kind of seeing this one?
I think it's going to be a really tough game. Listen, I feel like I probably say that most weeks, but I think given the fact we've had a couple of good results, given the performance that we put in on Sunday, I do think it will be hard to back that up. Obviously, Newcastle haven't had a game this weekend. They've had a little bit of time to rest and recuperate. That's something that they haven't really had a lot of this season. So they will be fresh for this one. Also, they do seem to be having quite a few players coming back from injury. I know they've got some long-term absentees at the back, but in forward areas, you know, Callum Wilson's back in training. Harvey Barnes been getting minutes recently. Obviously, Anthony Gordon and Alexander Isak have been in really good form too. So yeah, I'm expecting a really tough game. As you said, they haven't quite hit the same heights as last season, but I think in recent weeks, they have been a bit more sort of like their old selves, because there was one point earlier in the season where they were missing 10, 11 first team players. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how big your budget is, when you are in as many competitions as they are and you're expected to win as many games as they are, quite simply, you're not going to hit those heights. So yeah, it's going to be a really tough game. I don't think we're playing them at a particularly good time. But that being said, if we play like we did in the first half an hour on Sunday, then we're going to have a chance against anyone.
And of course, our next two opponents have one thing in common, Newcastle and Fulham. They've both battered Spurs in recent weeks. Fulham have been a bit of a hot and cold team, I guess, having dispatched Ange Postecoglou's boys in that sort of shock result a few weeks ago. And then after that, they've had a few defeats, most recently against Liverpool, beat West Ham. Pereira's been scoring a few goals, but maybe haven't picked up quite as many points as they would have liked.
No, they haven't. And as you said, I think they're quite a strange team, to be honest with you, because I've seen them play a few times this season and I've either been really impressed or quite disappointed. I saw them play against Arsenal a few months ago. I believe that was over Christmas at the Cottage, and they were absolutely excellent. They beat Arsenal and they deserved to win that game. Of course, they had a really good run in the Carabao Cup as well. But Yeah, they are quite a strange team. You look at some of their recent results, they've had some good wins at home, beating the likes of Bournemouth, Brighton, as you mentioned, Spurs. They beat West Ham, but everyone beats West Ham, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'm expecting a really tough game. With Fulham, the big thing is, where is their goal threat coming from? Because in recent weeks, the goal threat has come from Rodrigo Muniz. Of course, before that, Raul Jimenez had a bit of a hot streak as well. That was something that I must admit I wasn't really expecting. I thought his days of being a top Premier League player might be behind him, but they managed to get a tune out of him. When you bear in mind the fact that they sold Alexander Mitrovic for 50 million last summer, I didn't expect them to do this well. I probably thought they might be sort of in and around the strugglers towards the bottom of the league, but they've had a really good season. They're 12th at the minute. Obviously, we know that historically 12th has belonged to us, so there's definitely going to be something on the line in this one. But yeah, again, it's another really tricky game. I do think they're quite even sides, Fulham and Palace. It is the sort of game that could definitely go either way.
And then just finally, Matt, in terms of our squad, how do you think we'll cope with these three games in quick succession?
Well, I think one of the benefits of beating West Ham so convincingly on Sunday was the fact that we could take some of our key players off and rest them for the final 20, 30 minutes of the game. That was definitely an added benefit. Obviously, we're hoping that Adam Wharton pulls up all right for the midweek game against Newcastle. I don't think we're really expecting to have any players back for these next two, the likes of Jefferson Lerma and Mark Gahey. I think they're slightly more long-term. Obviously, Oliver Glasner has said that we're not going to see Cheick Doucouré and Matthias Fantser again this season, which is a shame. But to be honest with you, in Doucouré's case, I don't really mind that. I'd much rather he has the summer to rest and recuperate and be ready to go again next season. But yeah, listen, there might be a little bit of rotation. I'm not sure someone like Will Hughes can play three Premier League games in a week, but we're going to have to wait and see. I think one thing that has been really evident in the last few weeks is the fact that under Glasner, it feels as though we are less reliant on individuals. It is more about the system and players slotting into that system. It does feel as though they know exactly what they need to be doing within that system. So I think that is quite comforting, the fact that, you know, we do have players in our squad who can come in and play in different roles. You know, we've seen it in recent weeks with Lerma going into the back three, Klein going into the back three. Of course, we know that someone like Chris Richards is quite adaptable as well. So yeah, listen, it will be tough on the squad because it's not something that at Palace we do that often, but we do have options on the bench. And, you know, even in forward areas, we've got Jordan Ayew on the bench, Odson Edouard, of course, he came on as well. So with someone like Michael Olise, I don't know if he's going to play all of these minutes, but listen, we do have a squad and I do feel as though under Glasner, we are in a better place to use it.
Let's round off the podcast then, shall we, Matt? And 4 points across these two games, would you be content with that?
Yeah, I would be delighted with 4 points across these two games. I think for me, the main thing is just about trying to carry on some of that momentum. Obviously, with the fantastic win at Anfield, we backed that up with a brilliant result against West Ham. Let's go and get another win. You know, I'm not saying we're going to win both these games. I would love us to, but, you know, I think another win in one of them would be fantastic. Let's keep on getting more points on the board. Let's keep on kind of building the positivity ahead of next season.
Nice one. Yeah, let's indeed do that. Have a good week, Palace fans. In the meantime, we'll be on Twitter, TC Palace Pod, Facebook, Team Called Palace. You can subscribe to the pod on Spotify or iTunes. Let's see things out with another bit of Glad All Over.